1839 to 1846. This is NPR News.
Support for this program is brought to you by Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. It's Friday, October 24, 2003, 10:04 a.m. on the central coast of California. It's time for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. One view that KUSP does endorse, that I'd like to endorse and talk about right now, is your pledge of support to the station. I'm going to take this to a personal note right now. As I said, my name is Lyle Troxell, and up until very recently, my father, Peter Troxell, was the station manager here at KUSP. He's been involved with the station for 20 years. He has a show, State of the Arts, or In the Green Room, which my mother is filling in for in about a half an hour after Geek Speaks at 11:30. It's a show about the arts. And in general, KUSP, for me, is pretty close. It's a family thing. And I know that not everyone has that kind of attachment to being at the station and growing up at the station like I do. But I want to tell you about something else that you can be involved with, and that's pledging. And the reason I mention that from a personal note is, I've been involved in the station for about 20 years. I used to come and sit on my dad's show and be really quiet in the corner while he was doing his program interviewing wonderful people throughout the Monterey Bay area. And I had an attachment to the station. I always talked about the station. I always listened to the station. When I started making money in the dot-com boom, I actually had some money and thought, you know, on one of the pledge drives where I was answering phones, I'm like, I should be doing this. I should be donating money to the station. So I did it, not thinking that it would really change how I felt about the station. But I was wrong. It did change. When you donate money, when you put your own money into something that you listen to and something you participate with anyway, you have this feeling of pride. You're proud of the station. You have this respect and this feeling of, I don't want to be possessive, but ownership about the station. Donating that money is a completely different feeling than what you get by just listening to it without donating money. And I urge you to try it out if you haven't done that. I urge you to call us up or go to the web and donate your money and get that feeling, which I'm going to try to explain. If you haven't had the experience, it's like your hometown. If you're ever in your hometown, if you live in your hometown, if you're lucky enough to live in your hometown, you have this feeling like it's yours. And it's not something that's easy to explain. It gives you a good feeling. Well, when you donate money, whenever you hear the station, whenever you hear the name, whenever you see the logo around, you feel that same way. You feel, oh yeah, that's mine. It's part of my life in a lot of ways. So I urge you, call 476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. You can also, of course, do it on the web. KUSP is so much of a family thing for me that I consider the geeks who are all in the house today, John, Miles, Sean, geeks, as family. And also, my wife, Daria, who's here. Hi, Daria.
Hello.
How you doing?
Fine.
I should hope you think of her as family.
Yeah, I do. I imagine that. It's that whole last name thing. Daria, why do you like KUSP?
I like KUSP because it provides us with something that can challenge our way of thinking. We are so, as we hear on the previous program, inundated with corporate media that KUSP is one of those programs that really brings us alternative programming and shows that provide a different view on what's going on in the world. And I really appreciate that being here in my community. And this is one of the ways that, you know, as you've said, we're able to give back to that is by being here.
Great. Thank you. We are going to do Geek Speak today because, hey, we're geeks and that's what we're going to do. So we're going to talk about geek news mostly today, but I urge you to go ahead and go online to kusp.org and use that time to push the blue button and donate some money. You can do that securely. You can also, if you'd like to ask us a question during the show, you're welcome to go to geekspeak.org, click on the geeks, and send a message to us, and we'll try to respond to that on air if you'd like to do that. But if you're going to spend the time to ask us a question, go ahead and call the phone numbers and make a donation. 476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877. Miles, let's have you start today on the news.
All right, this is something that's been covered in general news as well, but the Senate approves an anti-spam bill. This is a federal legislation. Well, there's some good points and bad points. It doesn't restrict all spam. What it does is put restrictions on types of spam. In other words, spam that forges headers so that you can't just reply back, that has some shady dealings, that are basically fraudulent sites, are, of course, banned, and they actually have penalties associated with them as opposed to the very fuzzy line that was there before. Adult content must be clearly marked so that people can filter it out. However, a side effect of this is that the statutes on the federal level are much less restrictive than the statutes recently passed by the California state government. So, and because federal law trumps state law, there's some confusion as to how that'll affect. It may dilute the California effort. But okay, that's what's going on Capitol Hill.
You know, you heard my email thing that happens every time I receive email. I get sound effects that happen. And it's so frustrating to go into your email box and feel like you're in a sleazy bar. That's what I feel like every time I check my email. I'm looking for, you know, okay, my notes from my friends and my email from my grandmother and stuff. But most of the time, it just feels like I'm in this sleazy bar. And there's nothing wrong with a sleazy bar.
I was thinking about you the other day.
Exactly. You want some Viagra? And it's so frustrating. So I'm looking forward to legislation. And I know it's a real concern that you throw legislation into free speech, and there's a real issue there, but I'm glad.
A quote from Senator McCain was that, or a sentiment made by him, was that legislation alone will not stop spam, but it doesn't mean that we should just stop and just take it.
Right.
You should be completely passive about doing something about it.
Thank you, Miles. John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com.
And Mac Enthusiast.
Mac Enthusiast. Oh, didn't know
and
that.
Prius Enthusiast. You know, I'm going to start with that story. Prius. Toyota, car manufacturer, has announced that the new Prius was going to be coming out. This is back in June.
John, what's so geeky about the Prius?
The Prius is a hybrid vehicle. It runs on electricity and gasoline. You never have to plug it in. Mine gets about 45 to 50 miles per gallon. The new one that's coming out this month that is now out, and in fact, our very own Sean and Maggie Cleveland have put their down payment and ordered one, should be here when?
2 to 4 weeks.
Wow. Rad.
So, Sean, you've got one. Miles, you have one. And yeah. Sean, you're going to get one. John, you have one. Miles, right. You have one. Okay, so, Daria, we need to get on it.
The new one, the current one gets purportedly 52 miles per gallon.
Oh.
I usually get... the current one.
The current
one. The one that Miles and I have.
Yeah, 47 to 52. You know, 18, so I think 52.
The one Sean and Maggie are getting gets between 51 and 60 miles per gallon.
And this is a four-door sedan.
It's a four-door sedan, hatchback. Fold down your seats.
I thought the numbers were 55 to 62 or something like that.
You know what? This is from Toyota. I've got 51 to 60 with an average of 55 miles per gallon. And one of the reasons I got the Prius, besides being a cool, geeky toy, is because it's a very clean car. It's a super ultra-low emissions vehicle. It means it would take 100 Priuses to equal the output of your average clean car. The one Sean and Maggie are getting.
Let's say a Honda Accord or something.
Right. Okay. Which is a low emissions vehicle. Okay. The one Sean and Maggie are getting, they had to make a whole new category for it. It's called a PZEV, Partial Zero Emissions Vehicle. What this means is when it's running, if you do an emissions test of the ambient air and an emissions test of the tailpipe is cleaner than the ambient air.
So basically, if you go to Los Angeles
Los Angeles is already much dirtier.
Okay.
Like the existing Honda Civic already cleaned the air.
Are they going to have attachments for the exhaust that you just breathe so that you can, like, deal with that?
Pump it back into the cabin.
Think if you do that to planes.
Yeah,
think about commercial airlines.
If
they fly through the air, they're actually cleaning it. That would be really cool.
That would be. Okay, I want to talk about something really exciting. Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the other geekier things, I don't know if you folks got this, it has Bluetooth enabled. So it's the first Bluetooth-enabled vehicle that I know of.
I know Sean got that because I said, oh, you're still using that phone? He's like, yeah, but as soon as I get the new Prius, I got to get a new phone because I have to have a phone that has Bluetooth so I can use the Prius system. Okay, I want to talk about something really exciting for us. We have a UCSC faculty member who has donated a pledge for, excuse me, a challenge grant pledge of $365 for the Geek Speak Hour. And this pledge is specifically for anybody that works up at UCSC, which would include me because I work at UCSC. So any UCSC faculty, staff, or students, you can call now and get your money doubled. So call 476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877. And any dollar you match, up to $365, will get matched as well by this anonymous faculty member from UCSC. Now, I work at UCSC. It's a great environment. It's the city on the hill. It's a big thing for Santa Cruz to have a wonderful college in town. And I want to urge anybody to do that. And in fact, Daria, I think that you and I should donate today on Geek Speak.
All right.
We are basically broke, so we'll donate $35.
How about 50?
50, okay.
Yeah.
All right, $50 from, so we start out, we're going to get that 365, we'll get lowered to 315 because the Troxels, Daria and Lyle, are donating 50.
Speaking of donators.
Yes.
We do have some donors to thank from the previous program. Chris of Grover Beach, Democracy Now, just had the chance to listen for the very first time and really enjoyed it. So thank you very much, Chris, for calling in your pledge. Fred from Los Osos, thank you for your continuing support. Christina from Aromas, new to the KUSP family, thank you
Welcome.
Very much for joining us. Favorite program, Democracy Now. And Dana from Davenport listens to almost everything, and I hope that includes Geek Speak.
You know, and if you are, you know, still listening, you're listening to Democracy Now! Regularly, and you're still with us right now, please call in now to support Democracy Now! You don't have to call in for supporting Geek Speak. You can call in to support KUSP, because that's where your money goes when you donate to KUSP. It supports the entire line of programming that we offer here, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Kind of exciting. We're here all the time. What friends are like that, really, you know, when you think of it?
And those numbers are
476-5900. I'll let you do the toll-free.
1-800-655-5877. Or do it the Geek Way by pledging online at KUSP.org and hit that big blue button.
And if you spend any time of your life up at UCSC, do it right now, because your dollars will be doubled during this Geek Speak Hour. Sean, we haven't heard much from you. Sean Cleveland, welcome to Geek Speak.
Oh, thanks. Good to be here.
Got some news for us, sir?
Yeah. Miles dug this one up this morning. Pretty interesting. Amazon.com has launched a new type of search. It's a full text book search. So instead of just searching the title of a book or the keywords that are provided by the publisher, you can now search the text inside the book.
So if you remember a phrase from a book you read a long time ago, you can search for that phrase and it'll tell you the book?
If that book's publisher is participating in Amazon's search and that text has been given to Amazon.
Okay, so it's not that they're scanning cool. all thousands of their books. It's that they interact with the publisher and the publishers are giving them
they are scanning the books.
As well.
Yeah.
Typically when you go to Amazon and if you look at a book, you have a chance to look at the first few pages. It's kind of interesting. I do it all the time. Because, you know, you don't know if the book's going to be any good or not. But, you can actually read sometimes 5, 10 of the pages of the book before you go buy it.
So if you're an aspiring author right now, make sure your first 10 pages are really good.
You're really good,
you'll
yeah.
see it on Amazon.
So, but you do have to register, or you have to be a recognized Amazon.com customer. You don't have to pay any money for this. You just have to give them your information.
And I guess the reason why they have to get the okays from the publisher is that theoretically they have the text and you can search it. And okay. Well,
cool,
I think
though.
That's a great feature to allow you to remember a book. I don't remember titles of books. So that's cool. Thanks for bringing that news item to us. I want every week, Geek Speak goes on air because of the people you hear, and because of Maggie Cleveland, our producer. Maggie works at the station, but she started working at the station because she came in to be part of the Geeks and then started working at the station. So Maggie's here, gosh, all the time. Sean, she's your wife. Have you seen her in the last week?
No.
Why is that?
Because she's been here, well, she gets up about 3 in the morning. Because she's been producing Morning Edition. And she's the membership manager, so all this money that's being collected, she deals with it. So she's been getting home pretty much 9 o'clock at night.
So 3 in the morning to 9 at night. Well, that's a pretty regular schedule for work.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say that she just pointed something out to me that was blatantly obvious, and thanks to her, I can not sound like an idiot. Oh, wait, I do. So there you go. this anonymous pledge from a UCSC faculty member is specifically for, especially for UCSC faculty, staff, and students. It's a dare. You know, it's kind of a challenge right there. It's also a challenge for anyone that wants to donate to the station. So they're not limiting it. I assume they're limiting it, and Maggie informed me of how inaccurate my assumption was. So if you're listening right now, which you are, you love the station, give us a call, 476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877.
Please pledge your money so that Maggie can come home.
It's also their anniversary weekend.
It's our anniversary weekend, so she can't be here this weekend.
Oh, yeah, we want her home.
And the cats miss you very much, Andrew.
Save a marriage, make some felines happy, send some money to KUSP so Maggie can go home.
We have sort of an update on the program last week. I actually was approached by someone who said, how is your computer?
Because last week your computer was broken and Sean worked diligently all hour to fix it.
And I was like, oh, yeah, we talked about this to like 60,000 people. I forgot about that. So, Daniel, thank you so much for your inquiry.
And keep wishing. We're not going to tell you anything about it. No.
We'll keep you on edge.
There's a solution. I know there is.
Well, we basically had to succumb to the... The evil little thing that was on my computer. We reinstalled the programs. We went to the website.
Let me give a real quick overview. Daria's work machine stopped functioning. Her Outlook no longer would launch. And Outlook was the email client and her address book and her calendar. So it's kind of an all-in-one package. When it stops working...
So you're saying Outlook not so good?
Okay, Miles, quiet that now. So Microsoft's product of Outlook, and she had the full version, which comes with Office, not just Outlook Express, which is kind of a lower-end version. She had the full version, and the company that she works for actually paid for it because that's a package that's very useful to have. Word, Excel, a lot of people use it.
I have to tell you, I was really in love with my Outlook.
Okay, so Outlook was something that was really important. All your communications, all your address, contact stuff, and calendaring was in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we couldn't get it to launch. And so we brought in the computer last week, and we said, Sean, go do your magic. And Sean, what did you do last week?
Oh, my God, what didn't I do? Well, the first thing I did is search online for the error message and found all kinds of people who had had the same problem.
So it wasn't just my wife?
No.
Okay.
And there were suggestions to launch Outlook in safe mode, to somehow fix your PST file by launching it with a specific string after it, to go into the registry and actually make some changes, to rename a couple of the files that are called when Outlook launches. I mean, all kinds of things. And we even did a full uninstall.
Of Outlook.
Of Outlook. And a full reinstall, hoping that that would, you know,
and
fix the problem.
And the reason I didn't get back to you at the end of the hour was that we didn't have a solution, and that's not good radio.
No. No. It still would not work.
Okay.
And in fact, they said disable,
spam filter.
Searching by, I'm trying to remember what, well, Norton and any of the other antivirus software on your mail client, that's a problem sometimes.
I mean, nothing.
No.
Okay. And have you ever seen this kind of problem with Outlook?
Yeah.
Okay.
But not with Windows XP.
All right. So we had this problem. Then what happened is Daria took the whole computer and put it back in the car and brought it back home. And that night I went at it again. And what I decided not to do, and the next step really in Windows fixing of applications is to reinstall Windows. And it's kind of a laborious effort. And really the issue I had about it is there are so many security holes in Microsoft out of the box that once you install the operating system from disks again, you then have to download all these patches and all these fixes again to the operating system. And during that time of downloading, you're connected, you've got a problem. So I didn't really want to do that. Also, we don't have exactly a really fast connection. So I decided not to install. But what I did instead was installed Mozilla Mail, which is called Thunderbird, and it's an open source email package provided by the Mozilla.org Foundation. And basically, it can import a Outlook PST file. So the problem is it has to have Outlook running on the computer to do it. So I moved Outlook from Daria's machine, the PST file, onto one of the other machines in the house that worked, put Thunderbird in there, had it import the mail and the address book, and then took the profile package that it uses and copied that back to Daria's machine, installed Thunderbird, and presto, she had a new mail client, which doesn't have calendaring, unfortunately, but does have address book and mail. And Daria, do you like Thunderbird?
I'm actually quite happy with the interface.
Yeah. We'll pay you the 20 later.
The really important thing to me was that Miles had done the research to figure out that we could, in fact, do that. Because I have like three. Lyle was the person who really turned me into this. I used to delete my mail all the time, and now I save everything. So I had like 3 years worth of email in there. And so thank you guys for that, because I mean, we actually did install all the patches and all the updates,
yes,
and everything. We did everything that we possibly could, and Outlook just wouldn't work anymore. So this has been a very happy solution to my problem.
And Miles is even more pleased than us from a fundamental level, from a religious level almost,
right,
because he doesn't like Microsoft, right,
right,
Miles?
Exactly.
Oh, that's not true. There are plenty of things that Microsoft does well.
Here's an
they have an
thing.
Excellent XML parser.
Miles, we didn't do a lot of research, but the software that we currently had on the machine, which was doing virus checking on email, doesn't actually automatically work with Mozilla. Is that a problem?
The virus. I'm sorry.
Norton.
Normally, Norton antivirus would scan the mail that comes in through Outlook to look for viruses.
It's not really a problem.
Why?
Because Mozilla's spam filter is so incredibly good.
What about viruses, though?
Viruses, it doesn't really affect. There are preferences you can set in Thunderbird. By default, it's not going to let you execute things right away. It gives you a whole bunch of prompts and protects you from that. You can also have it not download images in your emails. But just in general, it's not as good a virus vector as Outlook is.
And to explain that is that Outlook, by default out of the box, actually runs programs that are sent to you when you view the message.
Although newer patches have stopped that, but yes, out of the box, it's very holy.
So with this whole Mozilla install, Daria, make sure not to run applications that you get from other people.
It's the same old thing of don't run attachments.
Right.
I don't.
Attachments.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, wait a minute. This mail's filter, the spam filter, you know, I've been using Mozilla for a while, and I've enabled that. And it doesn't seem to be catching a lot of spam on my end.
Really?
Is there something that's different about Thunderbird?
Thunderbird has an aggressive... What is it called, Miles?
Well, it's a Bayesian mail spam filter. What version are you running, Sean?
1.4.
That should have it. Did you go through a training?
I did. But the problem is these people send spam to a different email, you know, from a different email account every single time.
This filtering, which is called active filtering, you might not have active filter installed enabled. We'll do it after the show. Basically, what it does is it looks at the mail that you mark as junk, and it starts building artificial intelligence logarithms to take that mail out.
Algorithms.
Algorithms, sorry. Not logarithms. So what it does is slowly over time, you know, every message I ever click on, this is a simple example, it doesn't really do this. Every message I ever click on, every message I ever get that says Viagra in the subject line,
what's that?
I mark as junk. It's pretty regular. I don't have a lot of friends. You guys aren't sending me mail like that, I hope. And so it learns after a while, it goes, oh, you know what? If messages are coming from someone he doesn't have in the address book and it says Viagra in the subject, it's spam. So we'll mark it as spam. So it starts learning, but I didn't tell it specifically that that's what I want to do. It just looks at all the mail that I like and all the mail I don't like and tries to find patterns that are different between the two. And one thing it does is it uses your address book. So anything in the address book from anybody, your address book, it allows it to go through.
Okay, so what if you spend all this time setting this up and you go to another computer and start using it? Can you export all of that?
I don't know.
I haven't looked at that. I'd really love if someone knew the answer to that. It may just be a matter of copying over your directory that has all your mail and cache files. So.
Okay, we've got a lot of news today, but we also have a responsibility to ask everyone that's listening.
Yes.
The phone number is 476-5900. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877.
Well, you did ask me earlier one of the things that I like about KUSP.
That's right.
And it's that we don't have to hear advertising.
Okay.
And this is only one of two times during the year where we actually have to come to you and say, we need your support. And if you're like most KUSP listeners, you are thrilled that we don't have ads. But non-commercial radio is more than just the absence of ad clutter. It is a whole different kind of programming. And because we don't sell commercials, we have a completely different way of paying for all this quality programming. We get money from the federal government, from local businesses, and most importantly, from you, our listeners. KUSP listeners pay up to 50% of our bills, and that makes you the largest source of funding. So think about it. Would you rather have commercials, or would you rather become a member? We would rather have you call and show your support. by calling 476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877, or, of course, you can pledge on our website, which is secure, kusp.org. And we do have that challenge grant going on right now from an anonymous faculty member up at UCSC. The grant challenge was $365. We have $235 to go on that challenge grant. So please call in right now with your pledges, 476-5900.
Or 1-800-655-5877. Or online, use the big blue button at kusp.org. Anybody that's up at KUSP, anybody that's up at UCSC right now, please donate. But I also want to recommend that anybody across the listening area that's at a college or involved with higher education as a student, a staff, or faculty, go ahead and call up now. Let us know that KUSP is part of your life. And also, if you when you call in or if you go online, you can find that there are different pledge amounts offer different kind of incentives. We have little gifts for you. But I got to say that the biggest incentive for me as a donator to KUSP is that feeling I get of, oh, that's my station. It's a great feeling. I highly recommend it. 476-5900, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, online at kusp.org. Push the big blue button.
And we'd like to thank Chris from Santa Cruz, a new subscriber to KUSP, for his generous donation. Definitely enjoys GeekSpeak and Democracy Now! Very much, and Chris has doubled his money.
Very cool.
Every
thank
dollar
you,
that you spend at this point will be worth two.
There is a new supercomputer being built entirely out of Macintosh. It's called the Big Mac supercomputer at Virginia Polytechnic Institute, State University in Virginia.
Are they using G5s?
They're using G5s, dual processor, 2 gigahertz G5s. They haven't made it on the top 500 list only because the top 500 list hasn't been updated yet. There's a list of the fastest computers in the world,
okay.
Fastest supercomputers in the world. Number one is the NEC Earth Simulator in Japan. It simulates the movement of everything on the Earth to try and figure out what effects, you know, like the Kyoto Accord, what effect will that have in 1,000 years. This one's hoping to come in at number 4 on the list. It's running at 8.1 teraflops, but that's not its full... they say it can go up to over 16 teraflops. Teraflops is, was that trillions? Trillions of operating points per second, floating point operations per second. And a floating point operation is a
large number of operations.
8.5, 7.2, 3.79, something with a decimal point is what's a floating
right.
point.
Right, where the decimal point moves around. It's basically
the
a distance subtraction.
Miles, can you just read off some numbers again? That was fun.
Well, just giving examples.
Yeah, sure.
Know what we're talking about.
Fractions.
Right. One of the cool things about this is the price that they've been able to do it for. Normally, the machines in the top 500 cost between $100 to $250 million. You know, it's a serious chunk of change.
It's not exactly your home computer.
No. Well, this one isn't either. It's being done for $5 million. And most of the supercomputers take years to set up. This one took a month.
Wow.
So it's, you know, you got
now, there are different types of supercomputers. You can do computers where they interconnect at a base level. And, I mean, there's different levels where computers can act as nodes in the network.
Right.
So how is this one functioning? Because I know that Apple doesn't support that many processors.
They don't go into that in the
okay.
in what I have here. And they also, they say it's going to be used for their Virginia Tech, it's an engineering school, so engineering calculations, when you figure out, you know, fluid dynamics,
right.
aerodynamics, things like that, you need a lot of processing power. That's what they're going to be using it for.
Because
they don't actually say, I was looking in these to see if they're using OS 10 or if they're going to be putting some sort of Unix-based operating system.
What kind of backplane technology are they using?
They don't say that either.
Probably gigabit Ethernet.
That's
like that.
I'm assuming, yeah. because that's the fastest way to connect computers now.
There are many distributed programming processes out there, so
yeah.
Doesn't surprise me that a university has multi-node systems, even if they aren't running, for example, a Beowulf cluster
right.
based on Linux.
Now, the G5 does actually come with gigabit built-in, which is kind of nice. In fact, I just found out from John recently that all the titanium lines have gigabit connections, so we'll see it in...
And hyper-transport.
And hyper-transport, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Sean, let's go to you for news now. Thank you very much, John.
Kind of interesting story from PC Magazine. They got a hold of a very interesting laser called a Versa laser. Looks like an oversized printer, except it prints to wood, paper, plastics, leather, some coated metals, stone, and even marble.
Wow.
So it uses a built-in 25-watt laser that's basically powerful enough to burn wood
that
up to a quarter-inch thick.
Whoa.
You know, it can cut into a acrylic plastic.
No, this isn't a color printer, I'm assuming.
No. But it's a printer that can print simple vector-based images into these types of materials, you know, at different depths. So
right.
They probably look like, you know, reverse 3D. What's interesting, though, is it can even do aluminum and anodized metals.
Wow.
Basically, it changes the color. Of
gets
the
hot enough
burns,
to change it.
Yeah, the anodized.
Yeah, this is. It's interesting that I've seen a lot of that kind of technology. It's used in manufacturing processes all the time, where you want to burn stuff onto parts. You know, put serial numbers on things, that kind of thing. So it's a great technology. So is this printer something that's going to be in the home?
No, I think it's more for industrial.
I want one. Thank you very much, Sean, for that.
Yeah, $10,000. I don't think it's going to go into a home.
Something that you can do in your home that my wife and I have is X10. X10 is this wireless, well, it's a company that offers home automation systems wirelessly. So, for example, I replaced the light switch in our bedroom with this little push-button one, and then we have remote controls that our son plays with that turns the light on and off. It's kind of a cool technology. It's, you know, it's geeky. But
he throws light switch rays.
Yes, he does.
Just like the cheat.
Just like the cheat. So he, in any case, our home has a few of these things, and it's kind of a cool technology.
Do you ground him, though?
No.
Oh, good. Okay.
No.
We encourage it.
Yes, more lighting effects, the better. Unfortunately, the company that makes this product, X10, is filing for Chapter 11. So,
no.
So we'll have to hold on to the ones we have.
Because they got sued.
Yeah, they're not closing their doors. They're simply reorganizing.
And why did they get sued?
So, okay, everyone's seen an X10 ad surf the internet. I'm sure of it.
Those little cameras.
They're not pop-ups. They're pop-unders.
Right.
What that means is that their ad pops up and then buries itself underneath all your windows. So when you're closing your windows down or minimizing whatever, the last thing you see is that damn X10 ad.
It's those little tiny mini cameras,
yes.
Video cameras.
And I mean, they're all over the place. So what's happened is this is actually a patented technology owned by a couple of individuals. They own the idea for pop-unders, believe it or not. And they sued them for, I think, close to $5 million or something.
Just so people are clear on this, a pop-under is one line of JavaScript.
One, yes.
Actually, Miles, can we please have the JavaScript line that does this?
You sure you want to let that out?
I have to look
window.open, parenthesis,
the
URL.
No, that just opens up the window.
Yeah,
that's
and then right after you just do focus, same window, focus blur.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. I mean, it's so simple, and they have a patent on it. It's kind of insulting. So are these private individuals that have the patent on that going to make $5 million
yeah,
from this company?
I'm
4.3.
Yeah, 4.3, okay.
But that was enough to put X10 into bankruptcy.
Wow. Well, I won't miss the ads.
Ranks up there with a patent recently filed by, or recently repealed by the patent office. Get this, a method for swinging a swing that was awarded a year ago.
You mean like a play swing?
Yes.
The method for actually swinging?
Yes.
So when you push Y,
yes, I think there's a small problem with the
patent. Be careful
patents.
At public parks. Depending on how you do it, you could get sued for $5 million. $4.7. John.
We had a Marcus Santa Cruz called in with a Prius question. He says, or asks, I am considering purchasing a Prius, but I'm concerned about the longevity of the battery pack. What is your expected lifespan? Based on what studies, what happens when they wear out, and what does it cost to replace them? This is a great question. This is all stuff I asked before I bought a Prius, too.
So what are the answers?
The answer is the expected lifespan of the old-style Prius, the kind that Miles and I have, is 8 years.
And the newer ones are longer.
The newer ones are guaranteed for the life of the car.
Whatever that means.
Whatever that means. So they
the
say
car explodes every 8 years.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, gee, your car's dead because your battery's died. So that's the life of your car. I don't know. So what happens when they wear out? If you have the older model, you replace the dead cell. You take it in, they replace the cell. And what does it cost to replace them? I've heard the battery pack costs about $8,000 to $12,000 in current technology. I bought it in the hope that battery technology would improve over the years, or that there would be a fuel cell option or something else available by the time the battery pack expired. But if you're getting a new Prius, this doesn't seem to be a problem because they warranty it for the life of the car. You should contact Toyota directly to find out what exactly that means.
But that's a good thing to do because, yeah, those battery packs are expensive. I remember when the first Prius were coming out, what we heard was that Toyota, because of the cost of the battery, was losing money on every car.
Right.
And they were still going to do it because they wanted to get to a volume where they'd start making money. So technically they were losing money in the beginning because the battery packs were so expensive. So So that was a little bit of a concern if it was going to go out in 8 years. Though 8 years for a car length,
apparently that's no longer the case. Apparently they're breaking even now on the new Prius.
Yeah, they're actually making money. And a lot of that is because they've changed the way they're manufacturing the car. Not just the battery packs, but they've changed the way they produce the car. It's on a new assembly line that shares it with a bunch of other cars before the Prius is made in one place only.
All right. Well, thank you very much for answering that call.
And thank you, Mark, for calling.
Yeah, they didn't have that information when I asked them. So
someone else that called and made a pledge, correct?
Yes, we had a pledge from Goodman Graphics of Santa Cruz. Thank you very much for your continuing support. Favorite programs include Geek Speak and NPR News, so thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Steve, very much for calling in and donating. Something else that happens on Geek Speak all the time, happens for us, is we get people come up to us and say, hey, will you talk about this on the show? And that's why in September we did a whole series on digital photography. In fact, Steve Goodman of Goodman Graphics asked, I'm buying a digital camera. Can you do some shows about it? And we loved it because we got a good direction. A lot of people wanted to hear it. And I learned a lot about digital photography. We just got a request from one of the board members at KOSP, Wes, who donates his time to the station. Can we talk about encryption technology, specifically email encryption, to make email safer, especially with certain legislation that's coming down the pipe that could pass to make it possible to read people's email? There are technologies out there to make your email completely secure. Pretty good privacy is a good one. We'll talk about that in an upcoming show, I think possibly next week on Geek Speak. Daria, hi.
Hello.
Please tell us about KOSP.
Well, we actually only have 21 minutes remaining on this program, and this is the last time that you can call in and pledge your support for programs like Geek Speak or any other programs that you'd like to listen to here at KOSP.
It's the last day of
the
pledge
drive. It's the last day of the pledge drive.
It's time. You've been putting it off all week.
Yes.
Do it now. Right.
Do it now. Okay. We had the challenge of $365. We have $135 left to go on that. And right now we are at 20 minutes remaining during our program, and we would really like to get that challenge grant. So please call in your pledges at 476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877, or you can do it securely on our website, kosp.org.
There's a beautiful blue button, which I recommend going to, even if you're not going to pledge for some crazy reason, I'd go there and take a look at that button, because that button's pretty cool, and you can do it so quickly, so easily. Like, we're talking 5 minutes here, less than 5 minutes, really, to make a great donation. Sean, let's go back to news.
I forgot what the button looks like. Hold on.
Okay, you're going to see the button. Miles, why don't you do a news story, sir?
Yeah, get into the story, straddling the line between politics and technology.
Oh, yeah.
There's a company called Verified Identity Card Incorporated, which is making a push to make an identity card, something that you can swipe at hotels or businesses, airlines, to be able to get past all those really long, tedious security checks.
Okay, this sounds like a relatively good idea. The idea is kind of like that smart pass that happens on the Bay Bridge.
Yeah, on the surface, although it sounds very much like the national ID card that everyone had such a problem with before a few years back.
So this company's basically saying, we'll provide security people at airports, probably not very much cost to the airport at all. And then they'll service only their customers who have already been pre-screened and approved for these fancy cards.
Right. They've checked to see that they aren't on any terrorist watch lists and they don't have any red flags on their person.
So this means that a private company is going to be collecting personal information and security information about people and then vouching for them, basically.
Correct. Now, it has the issues of, okay, what happens when people start counterfeiting these cards, which will happen.
Right.
And then comes the issue of, well, with the national ID card, you had government making this. And that was a big worry, even though you have such documents as the Constitution holding them back. You have a private company do that, suddenly things become a little bit more malleable.
Yeah. It's kind of creepy. It's also, it scares me because, of course, the first issue of this is the people that have money are going to buy this service. And so, therefore, the people with a lot of money get to scoot right through that line, and the people without so much money don't. People that don't fly very much aren't going to pay for these cards. People that fly a lot pay for the cards. So it's a whole social structure change.
And as soon as you have someone who has some type of malicious intent forging one of these cards and getting through, we're back to square one again, and then you have a whole bunch of people who paid money that, you know, aren't getting their money's worth anymore, or reissued cards, and
So we'll take a look. We'll keep an eye on that issue. John. Hi. Thank you, Miles, by the way. John.
Yes, would you like a news story?
I would love a news story from you, sir. Please intrigue us.
last week, Apple announced that iTunes would be available for Windows.
iTunes is their
iTunes
store.
Is their, yeah. Well, the iTunes store, I'm sorry, yes. Well, and iTunes also. iTunes is Apple's music playing application, so you can play your MP3s, burn MP3s, rip MP3s, make MP3 discs. It's also how you can go up to them and buy music through the iTunes store. It's really cool. You go on, you look at what you want, you click a button, it downloads to your computer. It costs 99 cents. It's awesome. They just released it for Windows, and in the first week, they've had 1 million people download it.
Wow.
So there's now a million Windows users out there who are...
I love what Steve Jobs said about iTunes for Windows, the actual application. Do you recall what he said?
I wasn't there.
He said, quite possibly the best piece of software ever written for the Windows machines. Of course, Steve Jobs is the
CEO. Yeah, just a little
CEO
bit of hubris there.
Yeah, of course. Okay, I got a homework assignment for Sean. Sean, sometime this week, will you please download this application? Because I have a Mac, so I get to use it all the time anyway. Will you download it? Try it out.
No.
Why?
My housemate has already downloaded it. He's tried it out and he loves it.
Sean, because I don't want to be tied to a machine that I can only listen to this music with this application.
And that's one of the
I'm not
that's one
money
of the
on that.
You pay for a song, you get a download copy, and there's restrictions on that song, and theoretically only certain players can play it. Now there are a wide variety now of applications that play it, but there is a logistics issue about it. And
I don't listen to music anyway. I listen to KUSP and National Public Radio.
That's what I do too. So, of course, for us maybe it's not that important, and for all of
or
you
buy
out there,
CDs. I guess I do listen to music.
Okay.
We do have that challenge grant still remaining.
That's
We've
right.
got 16 minutes left on the program. The challenge grant was $365. We have $135 left to go on that challenge.
And don't make $135 be a stopping point for you. You can just do that 35. It's okay. If that's the amount that you can afford, 35 is fine. We'll take any amount, whatever you feel is fair, whatever you can afford at this point.
Right.
Try it out, and I'm sure that you'll like it.
Yes.
In fact, if you're wondering how much you should donate, we've got different pledge levels. There's a member card for $80. You receive a KSP 2-for-1 card, which entitles you for two meals for the price of one at more than 45 local restaurants. You can go up and see which restaurants are participating at KSP.org. My favorite pledge level is $120 because you get whatever the shirt of the year is. This year, it's a T-shirt by local artist Jane Gregorius. Jane Gregorius teaches art at Cabrillo College, and she does some fantastic stuff. So this year, the T-shirt features her. Also, if you do it on the web, the $120 level gets you This American Life I Save Public Radio package, which has a mug with the KSP logo and patch and stickers.
Because you are saving KSP.
Because you are saving
you're
KSP.
You're saving public radio.
And you're allowing us to continue what we do here at GeekSpeak, which is...
And to do all that, to contribute and to support GeekSpeak and KOSP, the phone numbers are 831-476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And we take web pledges, of course, at kosp.org. Sean, got some news for us, sir?
Oh, yeah. Would you rather hear about Intel's silicon manufacturing equipment that
I think we
could be
that
used for cancer?
Yes, let's do that one.
Or would you like to hear about the giant solar flare that's going to hit the Earth today?
Well, I like both of them. So
let's do the solar flare.
That sounds kind of important.
This is pretty interesting. Okay, the sun, you know, often throws off big amounts of heat, and that heat is, you know, it's microwave. It's a solar flare. It affects our satellites and everything that we've got around the Earth. Well, this is bigger than normal. This is called a coronal mass ejection. And it's expected to reach Earth at about 1 p.m. this afternoon.
Now, don't freak out. The worst that's going to happen is you're going to have communications problems. But
pretty much. It'll last for about 12 to 18 hours. And they detected this. This was detected on Wednesday from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Space Environment Center in Boulder, Colorado. What they found was there is a giant dark patch, which is a sunspot, that's about the size of Jupiter that's been moving around the surface of the sun. And it just so happens it's facing Earth right now.
Oh.
And bombarding us with all of these,
all these waves of energy.
Yes.
So and if you're planning on kids, you should wait.
So
and luckily we have an ionosphere that's going to protect us. But the problem is our satellites are so high up that, and our transmissions go through our ionosphere,
correct,
that our communications to the satellites and communications, general communications, are going to be
actually
impaired.
Even airlines are alerted because some of their instruments may
we'll
not work
weird.
Properly.
Now, what's going to happen here at KOSP if this happens, if this solar flare hits and affects our receiving of NPR stations, which we do through satellite, What we'll do is we'll get a feed over a phone line. So we still have backup capabilities. And one of the reasons why we have this backup capability is because of your donations to KUSP. So we're able to still get your our wonderful broadcasts from NPR, from our national carriers, and we're able to, of course, keep on broadcasting all the stuff that you like on KUSP. And because you contribute, we do that. 476-5900 or 655-5877.
And
such
just
a great
mind,
news item to just jump right into.
And if you find that you can't, you know, pledge because your cell phone's not working properly, get to a landline.
Right. Get to a landline. Landlines
it's
will
a,
work.
It's that solar flare.
Right.
Or get to a computer and go up to KUSP.org and push the big blue button.
Right, and you are supporting not just programs like Geek Speak, who bring you wonderful stories about solar flares, but also you're pledging your support for the other programming that we do here. We bring Democracy Now! We have Morning Edition. We have all of the really wonderful news program music programs that are here on KUSP.
Oh, like Two Steps in the Blues, which is later today. One
right,
of my favorite
Charlie
shows.
Wang.
Great show.
We also have Fine Print.
Which is coming up in just a few minutes, as soon as we get out of here.
A few moments. And we only have 11 minutes. 11 minutes left.
And $135 to go.
We have $135 to go.
It's time.
We need your support. We will not get that challenge grant if you don't call in and help us out. So please call now, 476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877, or do it the Geek Way on the website at kosp.org.
Thank you, Daria. Miles, Elon, hi.
You want some more news?
I do, sir, I do. I love it. I strive for it.
Well, talking about carbon atoms.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about carbon atoms earlier
right.
today.
Yeah, we're all carbon-based life forms. Carbon comes in three distinct types. Graphite, diamond, and it's called carbon-60 buckyballs. Like the way that it gets organized.
What about, like, charcoal? Is that, like, graphite?
I believe that's graphite, yeah.
Okay. So, in general, the
graphite being the type that what we call lead in pencils. Well, something that's very interesting is some researchers have put graphite into a high pressure cooker, for lack of a better term. It's put under heavy pressure, something on the order of 170,000 times the pressure at sea level.
Okay, so real tight.
Right. And they've come up with a substance based on graphite that is harder than diamonds.
So, that's interesting.
Yeah, they used an anvil, a diamond anvil.
I've got one
for,
of those.
Yeah, right. To use for inducing the pressure on this item. And when they released the pressure and took a look at the substance, they found that the diamond anvil had cracked.
So, a new substance harder than diamonds.
Yeah.
And where else are you going to hear about that except for on Geek Speak? Thanks, Miles. Sean, let's hear about that Intel story. I'm still kind of interested, so please.
So Intel's going to construct a device for the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center. And what they're doing is taking a technology that's been used to find imperfections in microscopic imperfections in silicon chips to look for disease, specifically cancer. So basically, when the laser beam is directed from this device, which is called a Raman bioanalyzer system, so when they use the laser from this system, and directed at a chip, the molecules of light become stimulated and emit a specific spectrum of light. And basically, this system, this device, picks up those different spectrums, identifies them and by molecule, and can detect imperfections and differences between the different parts of those chips.
Okay.
So what they're hoping is they can do the same thing with blood serum and detect the chemical structure of it, and then find out where the differences are at the microscopic level. So it sounds like they could find diseases and possibly cancer very early stages.
Interesting. So a technology that you're using, it's a different type of switch for me in hearing stories about processes going over to biology. But this is basically a process that's used in chip manufacturing.
It's been used for a long time in chip manufacturing.
And so now they're thinking, well, it could be used in the bio field.
Exactly.
So computer chips can actually possibly help save your life. Daria.
We only have $60 left on that challenge grant. We have 8 minutes left. You can call in your support right now.
And get some of that money donated to KOC.
And get that challenge grant met by calling 476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877 or by pledging your support on our secure website, kusp.org. We also do have some people to thank. I believe this is Keeney of Santa Cruz. loves it all. Thank you so much for your continuing support. Lydia of Santa Cruz, welcome to the KUSP family. Loves Democracy Now!, Talk of the Bay, Open Road, is a morning listener. So thank you very much, Lydia. And Dean of Aptos, loved the digital photography shows. So thank you very much, Dean, for your support.
Thank you, Daria, for doing that. Thank you, Sean, for that wonderful story about Intel. John Tracy?
Speaking of large spots on celestial bodies, we have a black spot has been found on Jupiter. You were talking about a black spot the size of Jupiter on the sun. We now have a black spot on Jupiter.
But it's not the size of the sun.
That's not the size of the sun. That'd be impossible. It's not the size of the Earth either, but it's very large. And
what
we don't,
is it?
We don't know. We've had it from two independent sources now. At first, there was just a picture of the black spot on Jupiter that was circling, that was doing the rounds through email and whatnot. And people are going, oh, that's interesting. And now it's been corroborated with a second photograph of the same thing. And we don't know what it is yet.
I hope it doesn't take us 7 years to find out what it is.
Does it move?
Yeah, and if an obelisk shows up on the moon, I'm out of here.
Does the black spot move?
It orbits.
It orbits?
It orbits Jupiter.
Does it?
Well, it goes around Jupiter. Yeah. It's either on Jupiter. Yeah. It's hard to say it's on the surface because the surface of Jupiter is cloudy.
We don't know.
We don't know.
And silly us, we crashed our last probe.
It's just
at the wrong time. Maybe this is from that.
I don't think we had a choice.
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
The spot's way too big for any man-made probe to make.
No, this is Jupiter's response. Stop crashing stuff into us. Here.
What was that? Thank you very much for that story we don't know anything about. Miles.
Only because nobody else does.
Okay, that's right. It's not a fault of the geeks. We haven't studied it yet. Miles.
We report the news. We don't make it.
Fujitsu and Sun are going to combine server operations. Sun, a maker of Starfire's model, they make the Solaris Unix operating system, getting together with manufacturer Fujitsu, and what it looks like is that the actual servers, the hardware, is moving toward Fujitsu taking over part of that. They've been selling better and they've been getting higher performance so that Sun can focus on their Java and Linux-based solutions, which is a big change for Sun being a heavily just Unix, the established Unix market, now moving more and more into the Linux market, the upstart, as it were.
Well, thank you very much, Miles. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks Sean, Miles, and John, and, of course, my wife, Daria, who's here to tell you about how wonderful KUSP is, and to thank some people.
Yes, well, we would like to thank Melissa of Santa Cruz. Welcome to the KUSP family. Melissa is a UCS student and really appreciates the programming that we do here on KUSP. And Maggie has asked me to please let you know we are one pledge away from meeting our show goal, well, not the show, but, you know, the goal of the pledge drive, of $106,000.
Well, the goal of the pledge drive is 120.
Right, the goal of the pledge drive is 120, but we really wanted to get to that $106,000 mark during this program. We are one pledge away from that. Please help us by meeting that goal by calling in your support right now at 476-5900 or 1-800-655-5877 or visit our secure website at kusp.org.
This program is supported by a grant from Cruz.io, providing internet services, including DSL and spam filters, for home and office throughout Santa Cruz County. Information about Cruz.io membership is available online at cruz.io.com or by calling 459-6301. I get people talking to me all the time about Geek Speak that say, you know, I listen to your show, and I go, oh, great, you like it? Well, I don't understand it, but yeah, I like it. If you're one of those people, you can call right now, because you're listening. Even if you don't understand us, you're listening. 476-5900, 1-800-655-5877.
If you don't get it, you get it.
And there are probably other programs that you listen to on KUSP that you can show your support for by calling in at those numbers.
That's right. Now, and what a perfect opportunity to do it during Geek Speak. You're not understanding us anyway. Go ahead and take a break and call us up.
Right.
And And if you don't understand us about something, you can call up. And if you donate right now, we'll answer any question you have.
And as we said, we're only one call away. That was a phone, a phantom caller who just
called
in.
So you still, right now, can take us to that $106,000 mark.
You can be the person.
You can put that, you know, in your journal. You can be proud of the fact that you've donated KSP, that this is your station. Sean, do you have any more wonderful news stories for us today?
Yeah.
Please.
It seems that the FCC is mulling a digital flag that will be attached to all television programs that are transmitted over the Internet. So basically what this will do is, if you want to play this back on a device, such as you recorded it and want to play back on a DVD player, you possibly might not be able to.
Okay, it's not the Internet. It's actually broadcast. The idea is that on the new digital high-definition TV that's coming down the line someday, maybe, we see, they want to broadcast.
No, that's different.
Flag. Oh, this is different.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, this is specifically rules the programmers to attach code to digital broadcasts.
Oh.
So that when you record them, they can't be played back. The other one is they want to, it's HDTVs that are going to be sold, they want to put some sort of device in it that has some copy protection capabilities.
Right.
So that you can't record. Kind of what they wanted to do with the VCR in the beginning.
Right. The same group didn't want the VCR to ever exist, didn't want people to be able to control
media
in
their own home. So the RIAA and all these other groups in the industry are working closely with the FCC to try and put all this copyright technology out there.
And the basic issue is that their current business model is threatened by new technologies in the home, and therefore they want legislation to protect their business model.
Yeah, so
we're
so
running
so
out of time
TiVo.
On GeekSpeak, unfortunately. Yeah. We're not going to be doing any more news, but Daria?
We do have an anonymous pledger who pledged on the website from Santa Cruz. This anonymous person cannot bear the thought of waking up and not hearing Johnny Simmons first thing in the morning. So if you are like that person, please call in your pledge now, 476-5900, 1-800-655-5877, or go to the secure website at kusp.org.
This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at seagate.com. John, Miles, Sean, and Daria, thank you very much for being on GeekSpeak today. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Thank you all for participating.
And thank you to the anonymous challenge grant that we received from the faculty member at UCSC.
We did match it, which shouldn't stop you from calling in and donating still to KUSP. We will be back next week with a full Geek Hour. We're on every week here on KUSP. For all of you that made pledges this break, thank you very much for supporting our community radio station, KUSP.
And thank you to the phone answerers. Thank you to our volunteers for answering the phone for us during this hour.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Arto. We're on the web at kusp.org. For GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Stay tuned now for Fine Print.